After 1945, developments in audio engineering and sound recording, coupled with the rapid growth of the music industry, rendered the recording studio an important site for cultural production. In the 1940s, a typical recording session lasted only 3 hours and yielded 4 songs. By the late 1960s, a single record might be pieced together from multiple performances over weeks and even months. Through the introduction of tape recording and the technological innovations that followed, the recording studio has been transformed from a functional worksite in which well-rehearsed performances were recorded on the spot to a creative workspace in which the tools of recording became integral in the creative process itself. At the center of this transformation are the users of recording technology who were actively engaged in modifying, adapting, and pushing the capabilities of their equipment. As a site in which a diverse community of musicians, producers, and technicians come together to work towards a common goal, the recording studio forms an important nexus between culture and technology.
This episode of Stay Risky was recorded and brought to you by Engine Room Recording Company.
Our guests today are Anthony and Brandon of the Engine Room Recording Company, located in the Broad Ripple neighborhood of Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is Blight. This is Blight. Blight's not a word. Yeah. Hey.
For anyone that doesn't hear the raw cut and the final cut, Ben will sound perfect. But we did just spend about 3 hours doing his 5-minute monologue. So hope you guys have fun this
The
weekend.
Worst part is I go through this before we do these shows. And at home, it's totally different. In the bathroom, it sounds great. Yeah. You get here, it's a whole nother process.
What, you know what the solution is? You need to get butt naked. Yeah. You need to bring in a shower. I don't know if you guys have the capability, but if he can be in the shower and do his monologue, I think we'll be okay.
I was gonna say we could bring in a toilet and just you can sit on it and maybe you'll feel it.
The show will never air.
You'll feel it.
Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you guys for being here. So we're going to kick it off. We'd like to know a little bit about the Engine Room Recording Company, kind of how it came about and how long you've been here, all that good stuff. So let us know.
Well, first, I want to say something about that monologue. Everything you said was wrong. That's how the last episode started.
Yeah. I was like, why is that a thing all of a sudden? Like,
it only gets worse as time goes on.
I did deep research there, man.
Yeah. I don't know, Brandon. How did we start?
How did we start? Well,
that's good.
Yeah. I have a loose interest in music production, and Anthony has a fine interest in music production. Okay. And he was like, hey, I want to do this. I just came back from being deployed, and it was, late 2020.
Yeah.
So the world was different than it is now.
Sure.
And we were trying to figure out what to do, and I was interested in doing something that wasn't my 9-to-5. And he had been doing quite a bit of real production, actually knowing what he's doing with, you know, real gear. And I had sort of a small amount of can-do attitude and positivity and thought, hey, we've got an idea about doing this, and found this studio, and the owner at the time was willing to part with it. And we kind of became decent friends with him. And now we've been here for going on 3 years, and many different projects, multitudes of projects.
Location's everything, especially with studios, because you want to be accessible for people from all over the city and outside the city. Why or how did you guys actually come across this space, and why did you decide this was our best opportunity to get this off the ground?
Well, that kind of goes into how he entered that last part. See, I tell that last part a little bit different. It was a corporate takeover.
So we'll just cut this out.
Yeah. It was a big corporate takeover. There was a guy here before, and we were like, no.
Yeah,
it was post-COVID. I think the space is honestly the strongest advantage that we have. Because, you know, there's a lot of recording studios and a lot of people with, you know, spaces in their basement, all that kind of stuff.
Sure. It's where a lot of them start.
Right, for sure. And hell, that's how I started. But we have a lot of walk-in traffic, you know, people excited that there's a recording studio here, and we probably generate a lot of business from walk-ins more so than even like our website or anything like that. That was especially true on the first, year and a half. But since then, we've, been putting a pretty strong emphasis on developing our reputation and stuff like that. And we've gotten some really cool projects from that.
Yeah.
So.
And do you have Brandon outside? Like, do you just leave the door open for the walk up traffic, and he's out there in a microphone costume, and he's like, "We've got deals
today." More or less.
He's actually out there with the military pull up bar.
Yeah.
If you can do 5 pull ups, just try to get a free session.
People into.
Hey, you guys want to record today?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were in the military. Thank you for your service.
It's Anthony. Yeah.
Thank you for your service.
No, yeah.
I didn't know you were into music. Thanks for your.
Thanks
for your art.
Thank you for your service to the Indianapolis local scene.
Sure.
Thank you for your service to the military. I don't know which one's more important. They're both equally.
Probably music.
Totally. Yeah, definitely.
I remember you telling me that now. I'm an idiot.
That's cool, man.
So you guys, I'm sure, have a wide variety of projects that come in here. Now, for anybody that maybe hasn't seen this room or been in it, it's a good size, but it's not huge. It's not, there's plenty of studios nearby that have, A room, B room, C room. We're in a smaller, it's probably 7 or 8 by...
It's like
10.
10 by 12, maybe.
Okay, yeah. So something a little bit smaller. It's a lot more intimate.
Size doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's not what they say.
it's a studio room inside of a small retail space.
It's like a boutique.
It's like a boutique.
I enjoy that, though, because it's and I've worked and recorded in bigger studios and stuff like that, and there's something really homey feeling about this. Do you think the size of the room and the feel and the vibe kind of brings a certain type of genre or a certain type of artist, or do you think people just kind of come in here, they're like, hey, this is a cool new place, I want to try this out, and because you could do any type of music in here, but you kind of just have to do it a little bit more segmented, right? You can't put a 12-piece band in the room all at one time. So how is what type of clients are coming in here, what type of things are you seeing come in through the studio?
Recently podcasts, but really a handful. Yeah.
Really,
like a handful of stuff. I think we excel at anything with drums, we can definitely do. We aren't getting a 9-piece bluegrass set with we aren't getting that
9-piece bluegrass.
Yeah, it's got the accordion and the
washboard, exactly where you're at,
washboard banjo. Yeah, and
it exists.
But I think it's really a healthy smattering of stuff. But it feels DIY to maybe take a stab at describing it. And so I feel like we get a lot of self-starting folks who are in that same creative space. But
maybe they have an idea for a band, but it's just them, and they want to maybe play every instrument or get some people in. And
I would say that's the lower end, and then the higher end is in development of where you are in your creative process. But we have no problem. It's just if you want to track drums, it takes the whole room.
Sure.
Yeah. We've had quite a few things, stringed instruments.
Even with, the biggest studios out there, they're recording drums, and then the guitarist is recording his thing in a
sure.
Yeah.
It's bass. Vocals, they're going to their booth. They're doing everything one at a time. So the space isn't that big of a deal. And also, it makes us more accessible, I think, than some of the bigger studios, because we have lower overhead.
Sure,
We've got a lot of the same microphones, a lot of the same outboard equipment.
Yeah.
But because we're, in a smaller space, we can have our rates, lower. Overall, this recording room is great. I mean, you can hear there's no reflections or anything like that going on in here. It's very well isolated. Awesome.
Well, and I love the feel of it too. And I'm a big fan of the way a venue or space feels, because it's hard enough for creatives to feel confident to get on stage or to put their music, and whether it's in front of an engineer, their family, just leaving the bedroom takes a lot of courage and confidence, and a lot of artists spend a lot of time doing that over time. I know that I'm sitting on probably 5 books of music that I'll never share with anybody because it's a lack of confidence. I just don't feel that I could do it, but I still create, right? So to be able to come into a space like this, especially working with engineers that add to the atmosphere, they're welcoming, they're willing to help that artist develop. I think it's such a crucial piece of a successful, whether venue or studio like what you guys do. So thank you for that, because artists need this. We're not lacking creative individuals, whether it's podcasting or musicians on any level. Mm-hmm. We need more spaces like this. So you need to expand. No, I'm just
kidding.
Here's my business pitch.
a little bit back on the point that I kind of brought before, do you see more full bands coming in, or do you see more an artist coming in with a grand idea and you guys help either with session musicians or other people and put that all together? What are you guys seeing now? Because I feel like it's tough to have the full band vibe anymore, just because, you know, at least, you know, 10, 20 years ago, a lot of people would have bands and they practice in their bedroom or their basements or they go to someone's house. But now a lot of people are just kind of doing things on their own and kind of piecemealing it all together. So what are you guys seeing more of?
Definitely full bands. I would even go as far as to say that's kind of the people that are like gravitate towards us. I as an engineer, like, I don't do a lot with like MIDI or programmed or auto tune or anything like that. I'm very into, you know,
like the raw,
the rawness of it. It matches the space, what we have going in here, and it matches us as audio engineers and kind of what we're into listening to. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool too, because it's, you're in a world of very highly detailed, highly like super tight. Like the band I play in, we're like a technical death metal type band, which has to be like, if you don't have it super tight, it just sounds like a big jumbled mess.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is cool to hear a band just rip. And like, do you guys ever do like live album? Well, I guess now you probably couldn't do it here, but it's still got like kind of that live album feel though. It's like, you know, the instruments are raw.
Yeah.
If there's
yeah.
a little flub, as long as it's musical, like you guys keep it, or maybe, absolutely. You know, that's yeah. pretty cool though.
I think the bands that want to work with us are there too with what they want to sound like. Over the past year, it's been younger kids coming up in the scene that are into mosh and into whatever new iteration of sort of grunge is happening.
Nice.
Like metal-y grunge, and so that I think that leads itself to our space and where they are, and it's, you know, it's their first or second step in the recording process. They're not like totally new to it, but I felt that personally, like going into a big studio and like recording my own stuff. It was like,
it's overwhelming.
Like I'm not strong enough to be here. But,
this is, that's a great point. I wanted to talk about this because I think it's something that needs to be talked about more, is the preparation of coming into a studio. Because I mean, it's a crucial moment for artists. And you know, it's not just, you know, turning on their phone or their computer and recording into that. You're coming in. I mean, you guys are pointing mics, you're working the room based on their instruments. Instruments are different. I mean, there's so many variables that go into that. And an artist who's not prepared can really be, one, financially not responsible, but also two, can be frustrating. It can be debilitating as the creative. So when you guys are working with artists, do you guys do anything where, like, to kind of like help them prep, or do you get artists to sometimes come in and you're experiencing that situation, and how do you handle it?
You try to be chill with whatever anybody sure. comes in with, because sure. you don't want to. I mean, we don't want to discourage them, but sure. also
kill the mood.
We want their business also too. So like, yeah, we want you to true. Like come that's in fair. And record. So there definitely are people who come in and nail it like on the first time, and
I'd say that's more so the rule than the exception.
Yeah, yeah, I would say like, be here. Yeah, and it's kind of, it's not, it's few and far between where somebody comes in like totally unprepared and it's like, this isn't going to work. I'm not sure we've ever been like, this totally isn't going to work. We definitely want to.
And would you guys like in the middle of the session just be like, hey, you know, I appreciate you guys coming. It's just for the tightness, or I guess like the, what we're trying to do here, it sounds like it's going to take a lot longer than we anticipate. Or if you're okay with us spending more time, which will cost more money. Cause, and that's something that like I have a conversation with some artists on music video shoots. It's like, hey, I know you wanted to do 2 hours. This is going to turn into 8, not because you're not good or not because of this, but like going into a studio is very different than playing live.
Yeah, yeah.
It's entirely different. Some people are studio people and some people are live people. Some people are both, but a lot of times you see a split between the two.
Definitely.
So like sometimes you have to have that hard conversation early on because you want to be respectful and be ethical. Like you don't want to, you know, not tell them like, oh, hey, here's an extra $300 to your bill because we spent X amount of hours, but right. you didn't realize it because you were trying to do your thing.
Right. I think that's our little Abbott and Costello kind of thing is our dynamic is helpful for that. Anthony's much more experienced in the production side of knowing like actually this maybe isn't going to work sonically.
Sure.
And I think my role is to be the sort of fun uncle around that makes sure the mood stays kind of light if we need to. But you do have to have that conversation. That's more or less like what the conversation sounds like, is like straight up, like, this is what it's going to be. If you want to try to continue with this, it's cool if you want to, but we want to be honest with you about how much is it going to cost. I mean, financially, it's expectations.
I actually refer to you as Uncle Brandon. My kids have no idea who you are. But I was like, I'm going to go see Uncle Brandon today. They're like, that's weird. Isn't your name Brandon?
Yeah. Ben talking about himself.
Yeah. Which is not unlike me. So.
It's unhinged. Yeah.
It's cool, though, to see that you guys have that dynamic, because I think Ben and I have that dynamic as well.
Absolutely not. I'm kidding. Keep going.
I tend to be the hammer and he's the heart. So,
sure.
But the thing is, though, is I think if you're going to have a good partnership, you have to have both those. That's like the whole good cop, bad cop thing. Not saying you have to be like, you know, knocking people down. But at the end of the day, if you're trying to have a successful business, you got to pay bills. You got to do this, mm-hmm. this and that.
Yep.
Things have to be organized, straightened out. And a lot of times you see people who will start businesses and they have a good idea, but the lack of structure is there. And then they start to face issues with that. So with that in mind, you know, have you guys seen any obstacles that you've come across that you didn't think was gonna be a harder thing to handle, whether that's, you know, cost of space or, like, you know, scheduling? So having a work-life balance sometimes is hard too.
Yeah, that's our biggest challenge. Right there. We both have, you know, other jobs too.
Same.
So, so, you know, it's definitely I feel like the amount of business that we're getting is as much as we can possibly handle.
Okay.
It's frustrating because, you know, if we, I legitimately think that at this point, if we didn't have jobs, you know, and we're able to be here, we could probably knock out, you know, probably double the amount of output that we have. So definitely, time is our biggest constraint.
So it's become a pain point, which is interesting, because most, especially businesses that we start, they get to that point where, you know, if they're going to be scalable, you have that growth point where it's like, ooh, do we take the leap? You know, how do we, because it's like, it's there. I can feel it. Right.
Right.
But it's that pain point of like, how do we do this? Do we bring on somebody else in order to cover that time?
Well, that's where the size of the studio has started to kind of rear its ugly head. We've been having this conversation for the last year or so, like, in order to justify, you know, bringing in, you know, additional help and stuff like that, we would need a bigger space.
Sure.
Or being able to do Studio A and Studio B.
Yeah,
two projects at once.
Yeah.
Because we're two audio engineers. Both of us are capable of working, you know, one podcast and you know, the other guy's working a band. And we could do that with the amount of interest, but we're having to push projects off typically, you know, 2-3 weeks out, because we've already filled out 2 weeks. And then plus, I can only mix so much, and he can only mix so much.
Sure.
He's doing a lot of video work right now, and that is where the space is starting to become an issue.
And if you can't answer this next question, you can just say pass. But I know that there are studios that they will rent the space to an engineer, so that they get the rent piece, but then you're still bringing in the business for the model, for the, you know, to keep expanding. But you have that engineer that's like, hey, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, I've got some available time. They can cover time that you're not here. But that way, keeping everything kind of moving, is that something that you guys could consider down the road, or is that expansion not really part of the business model?
We thought about that. We had a partnership with a company that kind of offers a service like that. Essentially, mm-hmm. you pay a subscription and you have access to spaces to work.
It's okay,
demand,
too. Like, I'm not trying to put you on the
point. The demand kind of wasn't there, and the price point was sort of not worth.
The demand is, I think the demand is there, especially, we didn't advertise it very well.
Sure.
But I know for other spaces that are doing it, I know that they're getting business from that. But it interfered with our schedule, and it interfered with our schedule as far as, like, it wasn't financially worth it.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, spend too much time versus what you would have to charge double or triple to justify the
correct,
because you're covering someone else's costs and then yours. Otherwise, you're just kind of doing it for free.
And then, not to mention, too, I mean, people, there's a lot of people out there who think that they know, you know, something about mixing properly, right? And the problem is our logo and stuff is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'm necessarily comfortable with people saying I did my product at the engine room, but not really having
being of a level.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Which,
not having a proper level.
And audio,
of production.
Especially like the levels you go up, you realize like the higher you go up in your career, one little thing mm-hmm. can entirely ruin your reputation. Mm-hmm. Which is just it's I've seen it happen quite a few times, and it's unfortunate, but it's such a fickle, like,
yeah,
you can't be caught doing this one thing.
Sure.
Otherwise it'll discredit everything that you do.
Sure. You brought up an interesting point of an engineer coming in and maybe the mixing capabilities aren't there yet, right? Doesn't mean they can't get there. Is there an educational piece? Is there something where you could have engineers come in, they're paying for like an educational piece to work with you guys and get to that level?
Yes, that we take on interns, and we typically take them on for a 3-month period. And it's typically people that either they've emailed us, or
sure.
You know, they walked by, or they're in a band.
Yeah.
The kid that we're working with now is in a band that we
right.
work with. Shout out to Crya.
Right.
I wanted to say the shout out thing.
So. Yeah, no, please.
Shout out.
It's
your first podcast. Yeah, all the shout
outs. We'll tag his band.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, and honestly, that's how I got into the audio engineering section. You know, I was going into someone's studio. He was recording me, and I was watching what he was doing. You know, kind of really enjoyed that part of the process.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And very naively, I thought, you know, for the project I did afterwards, well, I can do it myself.
Yeah.
I watched YouTube, and I did, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
And I watched this guy, and hell, he even came to my house a few times and, you know, showed me some stuff.
That's cool.
But it's definitely about just getting the experience. I don't think that going to a traditional school to learn audio engineering is the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just do project after project.
Sure. I mean,
in this space alone.
Yeah, because you need to know the room.
We've done 100.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yep.
That's a big thing, is every room you go in is going to be entirely different. So.
Sure.
Well, and everyone learns differently. I'm a huge believer in lifelong learning. If you know me, you've heard me say it 1,000 times. But I also believe that everyone, how they learn is so crucial to them achieving their goals or what they, you know, what their expertise becomes, their passion. And I don't believe there's a one-size-fits-all. So I think when it comes to studios that teach education, I think you have to accommodate the individual, whether they're more auditory, visual, how they understand technology, because there's nuts and bolts, but there's also a whole nother aspect to doing what you guys do, right?
Yeah. I try not to focus too much on the how I do things when I'm working with an engineer. With an intern, I like them to watch my interactions with clients.
Mm-hmm.
I like to make sure that they have an understanding of how to set up microphones, just like some of that technical stuff. But as far as like, I'm using this plugin to accomplish this, or I'm using this setting. You know, I try to steer away from that stuff.
Mm.
It's all about why I'm doing something, or how I'm interacting with a person,
sure.
A person, or you know, what
yeah.
I'm doing from a business standpoint.
And one of the best things that I learned from sports when I was in high school is that your best people to be around are people who are open to learning. Like they can't, they're not closed off,
right?
And their willingness to show up. If you can do those two things, which weirdly enough in today's day is very hard to find, but if you have the willingness to try and you have the willingness to learn, you can do anything, and you're probably going to have a better shot at getting hired to do something versus someone who's super technical and really hard to work with. Because especially with musicians or just running a business in general, you have to have the personality aspect. You have to be a good personable person to talk to, and you know, in case something goes wrong, you don't want that person to think you'll entirely change your attitude and just, you know, start attacking them.
Right.
They want to be in a space that's comfortable, especially if they're vulnerable with their music. Maybe financially they're vulnerable. Like they might not, this might be all the money they have and they want to pursue this dream. And if they have someone who's an asshole that they're trying to work with, you know what I mean? Not the same.
I love that he looked. Sure. Nobody yeah, yeah. can. Nobody knows, but he looked at me directly. Like.
I actually pointed.
Yeah. And he really accented the word, too.
No, but it's so important to have just someone who understands, especially like you guys get it. Most engineers are musicians, but like
right, yeah.
you get it. You've done it. you've had the awkwardness. Like me learning how to sing in front of people in a studio was the most like humiliating thing I've ever done. But once you get through that hump, now it's like, I don't care if anybody hears me or anything like that.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Anthony and Brandon.
This episode's Trailblazer shout out goes to Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Central Indiana. Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Central Indiana serves over 1,000 youth annually from ages 8 to 18 in Hamilton, Johnson, and Marion counties. They believe that inherent in every young person is the potential to thrive. They partner with parents, caregivers, volunteers, schools, and donors in the community to help youth achieve things like higher aspirations, greater confidence, better relationships, educational success, and avoidance of risky behaviors. In partnership with parents and caregivers, they'll match young people with one, big, or two, big couple or big friends, caring adult mentors to listen, affirm, and walk beside them. They'll also engage in fun activities with the kids, taking them to places like parks, bowling alleys, zoos, really anything that's a fun and enriching experience. If you'd like to volunteer or learn more about this program, head to bebigforkids.org today.
And we're back from Ben's stutter when he said we were taking a break. And we are here with Anthony and Brandon of the Engine Room Recording.
It's not nice at all.
So, but the last thing we ended on was kind of like business ethics. So kind of maybe switching gears is you guys have been doing it for 3 years, right? So kind of tell us a little bit about like at least for me, I think it's interesting when businesses start and, you know, maybe things were slow or maybe you guys just hit the ground running and you had a ton of people hitting you up. Over the last 3 years, you know, how is your progression in terms of the business kind of evolving? Do you guys start off slow or overwhelming demand or
what? Literally starting this, we're like, is this going to work at all? You know, is this like even a good idea?
Yeah, right.
And I think I'm really proud of us that I think, yeah, like we haven't like burned the place down. We haven't fallen on our faces. Like we've recorded lots and lots of like honestly more than I thought we would in this time period. Was it like different in the beginning? I feel like we had a good handful of clients right from the start, and then those clients like sort of morphed into other ones. And I think location, like people walking by, the construction's in Broad Ripple's been really tough. So like logistically, I feel like that was a little bit of a hindrance. But as you know, we started in early 2021, so the landscape was a little different than it is now, and I feel like it's better just people being out and about. Sure. So I do think it was a little slow, but I don't really feel at any point we were like, oh my God, we have no clients and we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, you guys hit the stride of pent up demand because we started in 2019 right before COVID, and that just, I mean, it just chopped us down. Like we were trying to figure things out. We actually started a show and did all fun stuff. But like for me, it was really tough because I basically had my hopes and dreams kind of crushed with that. And I think a lot of bands too. So once you guys opened up, it was probably the perfect time because bands are like itching to go do something.
It felt like that. And I was playing in a band also at that time, and we were like tracking our first record in March 2020.
Yeah.
And like,
right before everything?
Literally, like during the week of, like, we weren't supposed to be that, like, when they were
the
like, you
week.
Can't leave unless you have a note from your employer that you're an essential employee or whatever.
Yeah. Music is essential.
So we were at the studio we shouldn't have been at, and we weren't supposed to be out, but we were still tracking. Anthony was still deployed at this time. So, he kind of missed, you know, like all the oddness. He came back during a very strange time at the end of 2020 when we're like, are things cool? Maybe not. Seems like no. But his experience was different. And so, I think that kind of encapsulates where we are. Is it's getting
kind of stayed on a steady speed.
Yeah, it's been busy. Steady. Yeah, it hasn't been.
I think one of the biggest differences, so like year one, we were doing things like, you know, we had people outside playing guitar and saxophone and doing all these things like outside, trying to make it a spectacle, always door open.
Well, you guys had like street performers out here?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I was going to, Sorry, I'm blanking here.
You're good.
There was a band called Moose Tooth that we were working with at the time.
But great
band
name.
Tooth. Yeah, it is a great
band name.
It's a good band name.
But before we got them, you know, they had put stuff on Facebook like, hey, we're looking for a recording studio. So I would respond to those kinds of emails and stuff like that. So I had to be a lot more aggressive on the first year. Second year, the construction hit us. So the kind of the walk-in traffic kind of slowed down a little bit. This year has been all about referrals.
Awesome.
So that's been the biggest difference. So we've had a pretty steady stream, but it's been different approaches. So the first year, it was the open door policy at all times. Like everything. But this year it's just been, you know.
And I think it'd be cool to see you guys go back to that, because I think that's such a unique thing that a lot of studios, just based on location, can't do. They might be able to get, you might be able to get to that studio, but your guys' sidewalk.
Yeah, you've got people. I mean, you've got thousands of people that walk down every day.
It's $1 million sidewalk right there.
Yeah,
and thankfully they've actually made it.
Yeah, they only charge $1 million, $100,000 a month.
Finally,
the construction is what's changed it.
Like, sure,
there's no point now. But you know, things are starting to go back to normal. So
that's great.
Probably
I think
next summer,
every other venue around, if you're a bar with live music, like everybody has live music now, and I think that's really good for Broderpool in general.
Absolutely.
Is it's just more music,
Indianapolis,
music-y all together. Like you can walk down the street and Kilroy's is always playing something. The Brick House is that piano bar. It's always got, you can hear the music from there. The brewery and barbecue place next to us has been doing outdoor stuff like all the time.
Well, yeah, and like 50 years ago when Ben was 20, Broderpool was just, had every bar was a venue. Like it wasn't, I mean, I'm joking, but there, Ben's only 80. So, but every venue.
Your math is horrible.
That's okay. My brain's all congested. But no, like Broderpool used to be like a music little strip. Right? I mean, I'm joking.
You had the patio. Yeah. You had Sabbatical.
Sure.
Now those venues too catered to more original music touring bands, where the music you have now, which again, some music's better than no music.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
But I mean, the patio, Smashing Pumpkins famously played there before they became, you know, huge. You had a lot of bands that went through there, and you know, there's a lot of us in this area that are like, man, I really wish original venues would kind of come back to Ripple, because that's when it was really at its peak. Now you still have the Vogue, luckily, and things like that. But I mean, just, you know, music in general, like you mentioned, is just, it's such a community-driven thing when used correctly, and I think businesses have realized that, and that's why you're seeing them start to book, you know, cover artists, sure, but you're still seeing that it creates this atmosphere. And that is great for you guys, because you are kind of in the middle of it, and I hope more original venues pop up around here too, because that is really going to be great for you.
Yeah, like Indianapolis only has so much happening at any given time, and Broderpool is a place where
a lot of foot traffic, a lot of
Yeah, it is the second most happening place other than downtown that's not a suburb. So I think that's really important to keep it like that, because Indiana needs culture spaces.
Absolutely. It's funny because it's such a great central point, but like the joke is Indianapolis bands play Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, Wisconsin, because for whatever reason, and it makes sense because it's a business perspective for all the bars, they're going to make more money with a cover band. Because there'll be
for
more people there.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? They're going to have them longer. There's longer sets. They can play an infinite amount
of
songs.
It keeps people around, too.
Keeps them around. Yeah,
They know the music.
Yeah, and keeps them around, keeps them buying drinks, stuff like that. So, but, like, places like Ohio and Michigan, they have so many great DIY, you know, venues. They've got house shows. So, and that's what, like, Ben and I are hopefully trying to help push back into the city, is getting more, at least just recognition of people who are putting on live shows that are original
or
music.
Or even pop-up.
Yeah.
Pop-up shows. Pop-ups, you know, it doesn't have to be full-time original music. And I think some spaces have learned that. They're like, wow, we have a space. We could do a mix, a blend. We, you know. And I think that's the important part, is not pigeonholing yourself more than anything, you know. Hey, thank you guys so much for being on here. I definitely want to give you guys a moment. Please talk about where our listeners can, one, you know, go learn more about the Engine Room, and anything upcoming that you're excited about in the community and want to kind of put out there for them.
Well, you can check us out on Instagram at Engine Room Recording Co.
Yeah, Co.
I believe is what it is. Instagram is probably the best place to like visually see what's going on and communicate with us. You know, we're We're a 21st century business. We do our business on Instagram, like any self-respecting.
No more Facebook. Nice. Yeah. They also have an OnlyFans.
Oh, yeah. It's called OnlyBands.
Mike,
yeah.
OnlyBands. Yeah. OnlyBands. Mike Placement ASMR.
Yeah.
That is a great idea. What the heck?
Yeah. OnlyBands?
OnlyBands.
You heard it here first. We're going to be billionaires.
Yeah. It's just a GoFundMe for my non-existent band. So yeah.
Instagram, website, right?
Yeah, yeah. Our website's engineroomrecordingcompany.com. Mm-hmm. You can see our services, our prices. I think we have a gallery and our link to our SoundCloud where you can check out our work and what we do. I don't know. What do we got coming up in December, January? Mostly podcasts. I feel like we've got some band projects coming up.
Awesome. Yeah, we're still working with Pryor right now.
Yeah.
We've got some remote sessions going on, and
Anthony's working on his own stuff. Saying this because he's like, I'm not going to put it out. I'm not going to do anything with it. You must.
Sounds like me.
Simply must.
Bringing the angst back to Andy.
Yeah, we need it. Like that. No, I think I put this on the little questionnaire you guys gave us, but I think that as an artist, the thing that has hindered me the most is learning how to record, mix, and master, because I always feel like if I just wait a little bit longer, I'm going to have this piece of gear, or right, I'm going to learn this magic
not
technique.
Not knowing when to close the book.
Exactly. And, you know, it sounds bad because, you know, my clients' projects, you know, they're just as important, but, you know, they also have deadlines and stuff like that. So sure. Well, we got to go.
You want it to be the best version that it can.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
why, that's, it's yeah. more not, you're not putting it off because you don't want to do it.
Right.
You just want it to be great, because when it's out, it's done.
It's done, yeah. Yeah. So I'm actually considering having someone, and it sounds silly having all this stuff, but I'm probably going to have somebody else mix my project because I'm not going to get
fresh
it done.
Fresh ears. Yeah. Fresh ears are a big thing. I've always pushed that with a lot of bands, and it may not work for every project, and I know everyone's very talented in their own right, but like, if you're going to put in the time recording it, I would have somebody else mix. I'd have somebody else master if you
That's
can. Like,
you know?
It's one of the things I hate the most. I record myself and play, and I'd rather have someone else do
it. Because again, it's never done, right?
Yeah, it's
like
never done.
You're in the process and like, oh man, I should have done this note and this harmony or blah blah. Just sure. And it's all these like little micro things. And it's like, well, if you have infinite time and essentially infinite resources to keep coming in this room and changing all this stuff, nothing ever gets done.
Well, I'm gonna help you out here, brother. We're gonna close this book. Thank you guys so much. Thank you guys for coming out.
Thank you.
And check out that interview.
Thank you guys so much.
Engine Room Recording Company, located in Broad Ripple Village just north of downtown Indianapolis, specializes in making your projects go. Podcasters, bands, audiobookers, rappers, singers, songwriters, and everyone in between, the Engine Room Recording Company has the experience, the engineers, the equipment, and the environment to fuel your projects. For more information on their services, creatives they've worked beside, and gear they use, visit them today at engineroomrecordingcompany.com and be sure to follow them on Instagram at engineroomrecordingco.